Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, recruiting and supporting foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cent. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon.
Right, first question is, my 9-year-old son has really bad control when pouring liquid into a cup, glass, cereal bowl, etc. And terrible control when drinking from a cup or glass. Every time he pours it, it will end up on the table, or he'll pour too much milk in the cereal bowl. When he drinks, he struggles to bring it to his mouth without the glass or cup tipping and spilling. He plays with the tablet or my smartphone from time to time, but when he does, he would have an issue pointing to one small thing with his index finger hovering and trying to get aim. He's very good at sports. He has no problem catching a big or a small ball, has brilliant hand-eye coordination, hurling, football, soccer, tennis, etc. No problem at all. He's also very good at running, isn't clumsy, doesn't fall over himself. He's also very clever and very rarely gets a spelling or a sum wrong. I don't understand why pouring and drinking are such issues for him. His brother, who is 6, has much better control. Would you have any ideas what could be up with him?
Yeah, I'm going to keep this one kind of short, actually, and not in any way to minimise it. I mean, first of all, you'd always rule out, and given the detail this parent has gone into, I'm sure they have, that is he simply distracted and has one eye on something else while trying to eat and drink and, you know, is missing the mark in that way. This sounds like a little bit more than that to me, and I would suggest that you go to an occupational therapist and have an occupational therapy assessment done. You can access that publicly through the public system, but there will be extensive waiting lists. If it is possible to go private, you could do that. And there are numerous places that would provide those assessments privately. And also, I think I'm going to suggest that you get his eyes tested. I'm always a big fan when it comes to these things of rule out the most obvious, basic, simple things first, and then see what else might be left over. So yeah, get an eye test, have an occupational therapy assessment, if only to rule out any difficulties and get some guidance around, you know, practical exercises that you could be doing at him with home that will strengthen up and help him with coordination and movement, which is where this seems to be a problem.
Mm. That was, it's odd, like it seems to be in specific areas, because if he's very good at sport, then...
Yeah. And I mean, the screen use is only, as she says, or he says, time, you know, from time to time. Because sometimes if children are using screens at the table when they're eating and drinking, they're so focused on the screen that the spoon could be going into their ear. They're just not paying attention at all. But this doesn't quite sound like that. So I'm going to say do the occupational therapy piece.
Yeah. Our 4.5-year-old daughter has cystic fibrosis, so there are a lot of treatments and medications. We also have an 8- and 9-year-old who don't have the condition. We feel they are becoming more resentful of what they see as privileged behaviour, such as TV during physio, her choice of programmes, more food to help weight gain, etc. We have told our other kids about why their sister needs this help and provided them with information about cystic fibrosis. We've also answered their questions whenever they have them, but sometimes they feel it's not enough. I don't want this resentful behaviour escalating as they grow up. What can I do to balance it out or make them appreciate the situation?
I don't think you can make them appreciate the situation, and they are still very young themselves. I always have huge empathy for parents who are parenting in situations like this where one child does need more, genuinely needs more, and also have huge empathy for the siblings of children with special needs, because things are different for them growing up and it is difficult, and we do need to empathize with that. I mean, of course, you know, not to be negative, because there are advantages of growing up with a sibling who has special needs, because they can lead to your other children being more empathic, more responsible, more resilient, but they also shoulder burdens that other children don't tend to deal with, and they do it younger. They're more susceptible to developing emotional issues such as anxiety, stress. They can feel that they have to be perfect or grow up too quickly, that they can't show their own feelings for fear of hurting or offending or upsetting the other child. They feel they must help a lot. They can become parentified. They can feel that they have to, that their own feelings are being minimized. And that's what I want to, these parents need to be really cautious that they don't, they're not doing it, but that the children don't perceive them to be saying, don't be silly. You know how it is. This is because of. But actually to empathize with them and say, you know, it is frustrating. Acknowledge their frustration. Empathize that it must be really hard for them to see their sister getting all of these privileges and feeling like, well, we don't get those. So that doesn't mean you're saying you're dead right. It just means you're empathizing with the feeling. I think you've got to give them permission and let them know that it's okay to feel resentful at her special treatment and still know that they love her.
Yeah,
that you can have those two feelings, because that's very confusing for young children. So in addition to all of that piece, I would say, you know, maybe reflect how much that they can do that she actually needs help with. You know, so highlight the strengths that they have, the special privileges they have that she doesn't enjoy, and show them that, you know, she needs this extra special help for good reason, and look at all the things that you can do, but she's going to need our help with that. So we have to do more with her. That's why I think you want to, instead of being generic saying, oh, it's because of her condition and there's stuff, be specific. Name exact things that you're talking about, because that makes it more relatable for young children. These children are only 8 and 9 years old. They're very young themselves. And as best you can in a busy, demanding family, plan ahead for some one-to-one time with each of the boys, and as well shared family time where they get to choose the activity, but that they've to focus on something that is inclusive as well, because that's going to help them really get into that empathic piece, but give them some control.
Yeah. I suppose even though they are still quite young, they might have some awareness that I do feel resentful, but they feel guilty about feeling
that's
resentful.
Exactly,
so they're denying their feelings. And so it's important to let them be a bit resentful.
That I feel really strongly that, you know, and I've worked with, you know, the non-autistic siblings of autistic children in the past, and they come presenting with whatever symptoms themselves. But one of the things they feel, and again, this is quite common amongst that group, that's why I'm saying they feel, is that they want to be able to say, it drives me mad that he or she is allowed to do all these things and I never get time, but I still love them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you've got to help them understand that you can, it is frustrating and it's okay to feel resentful at some of this stuff, but still know you love her.
Mm. In fact, it's probably dangerous not to let them.
I would think so. They've got to be able to say it.
Yeah.
And as parents, to say, you know what, it's frustrating for us sometimes too, but part of being in a family is that we all work together to help each other out, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it is true. Because I suppose just in actually in general, it makes me think that because we've had some questions regularly from parents who have sent in an email here and they know their name won't be read out, so they can just at least
let loose
voice. Yeah. Sometimes I don't like my son or daughter. You
and
know?
That's okay. And what we have to get to a place where it's okay to say, I don't like the way the situation is. I don't like what it's doing in our family. I don't like all of this, but I love my kids.
Mm.
And in order for me to keep loving them, I need to be able to say the stuff I don't like.
Yes, yes.
You know?
My 11-year-old son was diagnosed with oppositional defiance disorder, ODD, by a HSC psychologist who referred him to Luciana Clinic due to his misbehaviour in school. The clinic, after assessing him, released him with a recommendation for us to take parenting classes and a leaflet on managing anger for children, both of which was dismissive. His father was dismissive of. He's always been a strong-willed child, and it has been quite difficult for me to discipline him, as I am the only one who says no to him, with his father playing the good cop and his grandparents giving him all he wanted. Needless to say, that left me frustrated over the years. He's very bright, creative, focused on many things he does. His school results are among the highest. He loves maths, coding, animating, writing plays, music and baking. However, he has little regard for authority and is disrespectful when he is told no. He constantly argues when instructed. He overreacts and gets angry at anyone who opposes him. He has been physical, but this has improved a lot lately, and he is acting out with other kids too, so not just adults. The behaviour, together with his father's denial of the issue, left me worried and anxious for years as to how he will cope in school and the outside world. The source of his misbehaviour seems to be boredom, and the complaints began since he was in junior infants. We spoke with his teachers and they tried giving him additional work. from the next class to challenge him more, but obviously he seems to surpass that. Due to his behaviour, the school banned him from school camps, and now from a foreign school tour. He is devastated, as are we. But my fear is that he will be banned from after-school care and ultimately suspended or expelled from school. I don't even want to think about his teenhood. Crikey. He hates school and feels no adult wants to listen to him, even when others are at fault. My heart breaks every time I drop him there, and I can't help feeling I haven't equipped him to survive socially. I repeatedly pleaded with his father for us to bring him to a professional to deal with his anger and suggested we reduce his screen time to a minimum and discipline him, with no success. What shall I do? Please help. My God, there's a lot in there.
There's so much in there.
Now, maybe you could, what is oppositional defiance disorder?
I mean,
and some people might be eye-rolling listening to that, saying this is the pathologizing of boldness.
No, it's not at all. It's boldness to the power of, you know, 10. And it's something that a child with a diagnosis of ODD really has no control over. When they're in an episode or an acting out, they can't be reasoned with. You can't use your classic parenting discipline strategies and say timeouts and things like that. Doesn't work, because it's like you're trying to, you know, it's like having the radiator on and the window open. It's just not going to land.
Yeah.
So you've almost got to negotiate and manage through the episode, the incident. And when things have calmed and the child has downward regulated afterwards, then you're going to go in with your reflective pieces and your talking pieces. But it's a bit like, I would say, think about, you know, the front part of your brain, that cortex thinking bit, right? Think about that being a lid on top of your head. And when you're in an ODD episode, this happens to some of us who don't have ODD as well, by the way. But if you're in one of those episodes, it's like you flipped your lid.
Yeah.
So that rational, logical thinking part of your brain is offline. So you can't be reasoned with. You can't be reached. And no amount of people seeing you in public when this happens, eye rolling, saying, wouldn't you think that parent to put manners on that child? That does not apply here. This is something else. It is a DSM, the psychological diagnostic book. It is a recognized condition. And I think what she's what mum is describing here in terms of the behaviours and, you know, the disrespect and the difficulty with authority, they're classic ODD behaviours. That's what we're talking about.
Mm.
So looking at this, there's a few things. So you went to the Lucina Clinic, which would be the standard thing. It's a HSE psychologist who diagnosed him. They will refer you to the state system, which for youth, child and adolescent mental health is Lucina or CAMHS. And what they've done is, you know, within their limited resources, again, I'm not justifying, I'm just kind of contextualising.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've recommended a parenting class. That's not a reflection on your parents. That is on your son's need for therapeutic parenting.
Mm.
Just to be clear, they're not saying he's like this because of your parenting. They're saying because he's like this, you've got to change how you parent.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, because I think that can be quite a challenging thing. You're going for help and they say do a parenting course, and that can make parents feel like, oh, is it me? Are you saying I'm doing this wrong?
Or it sounds like it might be just here's a leaflet and
yeah, and it
course.
Is. I mean, really, you're looking at, I don't know what kind of parenting course they were offering you, but ideally something of the more therapeutic parenting. There's many you could look up, like Circles of Security, Parenting the Theraplay Way, the MBT Lighthouse model. There's a number of programs that are very therapeutic parenting, because you're not going to un-ODD him.
Yes. Okay.
You're going to manage this with and for him. And by modeling appropriate therapeutic responses, you'll enable him to begin gradually to self-regulate. Now, he's 11 now. You're talking about years of this. So I assume he was diagnosed quite some time ago. The other thing that comes up quite a lot in this letter is frustration with dad.
Mm-hmm.
And dad not being on the same page. It is absolutely vital that the two parents, two carers, all carers, including grandparents, are on the same page and are consistent in how they respond, because your son needs, even more than most kids, because all kids need this, calm, clear, consistent, predictable parental responses. And the only way he can get that is if everybody is consistent in how they respond to him.
Mm.
With regards to discipline, that's the other thing that you mentioned a couple of times in this letter. It's actually quite difficult to discipline an oppositional, defiant child. I mean, the clue is in the title.
Yeah.
As soon as you discipline them, you are assuming a position of authority, which is their trigger, which is going to trigger all the behaviours.
Yeah.
So when it comes to discipline, model yourself on you want a discipline that teaches the behaviour you want to see rather than punishes the behaviour you don't want to see. That means setting up clear expectations ahead of time, allowing him to earn a privilege for meeting those expectations. And if he's falling short of the expectations, remind him what he is working towards rather than what he is at risk of losing. That's going to help him a lot to self-correct. Use transition guides like visual timers. I think I've mentioned that on air here before. You can get these big sand timers. In fact, I know they're going very cheap in Tiger at the moment. There's a 20-minute one. Mm-hmm. So you can use that and show him, this is how much time you've got left before we have to go here, stop this,
that.
That's going to help him feel that he has control over the time going. And model empathy, you know, say to him things like, it feels crappy when someone talks to you and tells you to come off the games console. That makes you feel really bad. And you know what? You're going to get to do it again tomorrow. So you're not saying, stop that, don't do this. Mm. Those kinds of discipline things aren't going to work. Avoid long lectures because he won't be able to stay engaged with you. It's pointless. Be clear, give choices and praise him in a specific way. Don't just say, you're a good boy. Say, I liked how you gave lots of focus doing your homework today. I'm really proud of you.
Yeah.
Be specific. So I think you've a lot that you could do there with creative discipline, therapeutic parenting. But I would suggest that you and his dad need to get on the same page. In terms of the source being boredom and the school's reaction, and he's not allowed to go on the tour or the little trip, which I think is difficult. With a diagnosis from a HSE psychologist like this, he should be entitled to some resource or special needs support in class. So maybe have a meeting with your school and talk about his, what they call an IEP, his individual educational plan, and see what modifications can be made to accommodate his needs. Perhaps offer to go as a volunteer chaperone on the trip if he can go. Maybe see if that would be that if you go with him, can he go? You know, try to be creative in finding ways that he can be included rather than staying frustrated with the exclusion.
But it kind of struck me that the mom said about he's bored at school. They've given him additional work. That's not enough. This kid's only 11.
Yeah.
He loves maths, coding, animating, writing, plays, music, baking. Might he be gifted?
Oh, I think that's very likely, and not unusual, by the way. And
gifted kids often are very difficult in school because they're bored out of their
minds. The structure doesn't suit them. They need more flexibility in terms of being able to go, well, I'm done with that now. I want to do something else. And of course, the school system doesn't lend itself to that.
Yeah.
So that might be another route to go and go back to your psychologist and see if you can have him assessed to see if he is a gifted child, because there are programs out there for gifted children. DCU do a really good one as well.
Yeah.
And that might be something that could offer a greater stimulus, because I was also going to say maybe linking in with groups like Coder Dojo and having, you know, saying, I know you really like this, so we're going to find more of that for you. Letting him know that you get him.
Yeah. Poor little fella. Wow, it's a hard road. Okay, we do have to take a break. More questions for John after this. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Some reactions to some of the questions we've had so far with Joanna. The first one was about this young fella who seems to have an issue when it comes to picking up glasses or cups and drinking from them. Maybe the glass is too heavy when he's difficulty balancing it, says one person. On the subject of resentful siblings, Kelly says, growing up, my brother was really clumsy. He was forever breaking his arms and legs. I just remember being so jealous of all the attention he got. He got so many sweets and games to play. I got none. I even once tried jumping from a windowsill to break my arm to get some chocolate. I had issues as a kid, clearly. I'm over it all now, I think. Yeah, says Kelly. We'll send you out some chocolate, Kelly. On the oppositional defiance disorder, young fella, playing music, as in buying him an instrument, is a great emotional release and facilitates social bonding, says Steve. Somebody else wonders, what happens if you live with an adult like this boy? How do you treat or deal with them? That's a whole other issue.
That's a whole other call in, you know, it really is.
Yeah,
there's a lot there. And of course, those behaviours and symptoms and disorders can linger into adulthood and manifest in adult relationships.
Can they?
Yeah. So I think if that's an intimate partner relationship, I'd strongly suggest going for couples counselling, relationship counselling around expectations and managing those behaviours. That's really difficult.
Yeah. If a person then grows up who has ODD as a child, Is it called something else when they grow up?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's a relatively new, you know, in terms of psychiatric disorders, it's a relatively new diagnostic. But at the same time, those behaviours always existed. It's just they weren't categorised or, you know, called a specific thing. So children can outgrow some of these diagnoses, particularly if they're diagnosed at a very young age, under 7, under, you know, even under 5. You can see that by mid-childhood into early adolescence, they may have outgrown the diagnosis, or the diagnosis may have decreased. Sometimes they've learned strategies for managing it and it's not as pervasive in their lives. So no two ODD children are going to look the same.
Yeah. My wife is expecting our third child. Our eldest is 12, our second is 5, and then our third is due in May. We have put the 12 and 5-year-old in the same room, as we simply don't have the room for separate bedrooms anymore. We mentioned this over dinner and the 12-year-old was furious. She threw a proper strop and said she doesn't even want another sister or brother. This, a bit late now, this really upset my wife and I and has added to the pressure we're already under. Any tips for how best to approach this issue? Should we try sleepovers in the room so they can get adjusted to what it would be like? All this anger can't be good for anyone.
No, it's not good for anyone, but I'm going to start this one by calling out the parents on this. You mentioned it over dinner. That's a little too casual to bring up something so significant with a 12-year-old who's on the cusp of adolescence or in the throes of it and is in a time when privacy is paramount. It matters more to them than anything.
Yeah.
But one of the phases of adolescence, especially early adolescence, is that they go through this phase of estrangement where, you know less, you want to know more, but they need you to keep things from you. So you casually mentioning it has thrown her, partly because you haven't respected her privacy and discussed this with her and broached it in a way that she deems appropriate. And she is now leaving in her head anyway that age of command and entering an age of consent where she doesn't have to do as she's told. You have to negotiate the boundaries with her. And again, that's in her head. That may not be the parental view on this. I'm just saying in adolescence, that's quite normal. So I would say you can't go back and undo it. But what you can do is hit the pause button, go to her and say, I've been listening to how difficult this is for you because you've been really good at letting your mum and I know that you're unhappy. Okay. That's like positively reframing your strops. But you've been letting us know. So ideally, we should have given you more notice. We should have talked to you in a different way and not just told you at the same time as your 5-year-old sibling.
Yeah.
Because that's developmentally a huge difference. So, and then just be really practical. And while it is difficult, you know, we don't have a choice because we don't have enough bedrooms. So this is how it's going to have to be. So now we want to work with you around how can we make this easier. This could be as simple as involving her in the process, that she gets to decorate the room, that she gets to, you know, half the room is designated to her.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're going to split it up that way. But I think you've got to acknowledge and validate her feelings of frustration, empathize with her loss of privacy. And how are you going to give her privacy in other areas?
Or maybe get some sort of room divider, because the 5-year-old isn't going to be necessarily respectful of
lipsticks and eyeshadow, stay away from them. No, I've got to get into the middle of that, thanks. So I think that you've got to really go back. You're really saying, what she's really saying to you is, I don't want change in my life. That's very, very normal. And you're saying, well, guess what, here it's coming. So you're not, of course, going to negotiate whether or not you have children or more children with your other children. That's not for a 12-year-old or any child to have a decision about. But your approach was too casual. Her response has been quite typical. It's not personal. When she says, I don't even want another brother or sister, that's not personal. That's her way of saying, that's how mad I am at you about this.
Yeah, and nobody consulted her.
And I want control. So you need to go back and acknowledge and just say it is happening, but what might help make it easier, ease the transition? How would she like the move to go? And do you know what? Apologise for not considering her feelings in advance.
Okay.
Children can be really taken aback when their parents go, I got that wrong, I'm sorry. It's not changing it, but I'm sorry about how it's happening.
Can I have chocolate? My 15-year-old son only sleeps around 5 or 6 hours a night. I read somewhere that young people need at least 10 hours sleep, but I know from talking to his friends' mothers that most other boys his age are the same as him. How much sleep should the average 15-year-old boy get, and how can I make him go to sleep if he doesn't want to?
Oh, you can't. I mean, short of a sledgehammer, you're not going to make him go to sleep. So you're going to try and get him to a place where he values the need for sleep. I mean, one of the things just for parents, because I think the teenage sleep patterns and sleep rhythms can be really frustrating. I hear this a lot. But the biological sleep patterns shift towards later times for both sleeping and waking up during adolescence. So it's perfectly normal that your adolescent would say, but I can't fall asleep before 11. I'd believe them on that.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly normal that they need to stay in bed till 1 o'clock the next day.
Mm.
Frustrating, but normal.
Yeah.
Like that's
in fact, I think some schools have done experiments where they start later for the, you know, for the teenagers.
Because, and that can really help. I mean, so we want them up, showered, fed and in school at a time when their body's saying, no, I need to be asleep, actually, and I'm not productive yet. I do think at his age, though, the facts are teenagers his age need between 8 and 10 hours sleep a night. But the other fact is, from lots of research, only about 15% of teenagers get that required amount of sleep.
Crikey.
So, you know, he's certainly not alone. So in terms of his friends and all of that, you're right. So some practical things to do would be to talk to him. There's some great stuff out there. You know, people have done lots of research about why are screens bad for us before bed. And it's not just teenagers, by the way, it's us adults as well. You could have a family policy of no screens in bedrooms after a set time. So maybe after 9:30 or 9 o'clock, all screens have to be surrendered, adults included, to a designated area. Even if he's lying on the bed and not asleep, he's resting. So I would take that. Look at the routine, and can he develop, or can you help him develop a sleepy routine that after dinner, maybe everybody, you just make hot cocoas or something, you know, make a milky drink, encourage him to have a hot shower or a bath. A shower I'd settle for, and that he lies down and there aren't those screen devices there. That books are fine, but that's about it. And you know, extra sleep at the weekend, because lots of parents say, oh, at least they catch up at the weekend. Actually, that's not the case. That doesn't balance them out, and it actually can hurt the quality of the sleep they get. So highlight the impact a lack of sleep has, and I think, you know, sort of appeal to a teenager's vanity on this. Talk about how a lack of sleep contributes to weight gain, acne, forgetfulness, a lack of energy, poor results in school, things like that. Make it real, as opposed to it's not good for you, because so much is not good for you and they just don't care about that. But make it about, you know, things that do matter.
Yeah, indeed. Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. How the world nearly came to the brink of destruction.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, recruiting and supporting foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.